Live from the satellite of love, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Well, it's the not-too-distant future, and somewhere in time and space, Nick and I are caught in a nasty place.
I wish I knew more of the lines.
What lines?
But this is nice. I like most places we go, except the one place they try to kill us.
We're on a space theme last several episodes.
Yeah.
We'll see how long we keep
like
that going.
I like the sci-fi vibe. You know, this is a little more homemade.
I'm a little
frightened that this might not survive very long going around.
You really shouldn't ask questions about how people eat and breathe up here. You should just relax.
Yeah. I'll do that. I think this is a nice place. I think there might be people around here, but the doors are closed and it's like they're in watching something at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they do seem to have a nice theater over there.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of paraphernalia over here. I don't get what's with the golf clubs in the one corner and then like some. I don't know. Is this an ant farm? I don't know what this thing is.
I don't know.
Over
it here. Just it's a strange little place.
Yeah, like all kinds of odds and ends thrown together here. It looks like they might make good robot parts, though.
Yeah. I'll take that. I mean, we haven't really met me. Oh, well, Hal, but hopefully it's not that all over again.
Yeah, no, we don't want that.
Yeah, but hopefully they're friendly.
And don't make fun of us. But yes, welcome to another episode of Derailed Trains of Thoughts, where we talk about stuff and sort of hints that maybe you know what we're talking about.
Yes. So, Tim, shall we begin?
Begin? What do we begin?
Story school?
Well, yes, story school. In story school, we talk about stories, and we try to bring out some educational aspects of them, partly not just to teach you, our listeners, as if we're some gurus, which we're not really.
Nah, we just kind of like to talk.
Yeah, I mean, we're the students as much as the teachers in some ways. It's a learning experience for all of us.
Yes. So sometimes we do more philosophical things, but today we're going to get very nuts and bolts.
Yeah. About what makes a story work. Well, I guess we came up with two different analogies for this. Either kind of what's your engine, what makes it run, or
the kind of the skeleton of the story. The bare bones. The bare bones, yes, thank you. So there are, you know, if you go to writing classes, they'll sometimes talk about various things that are kind of how you break down a plot.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just start with they'll say there's nine basic plots that all stories fit into, that all stories are basically the same story or almost the same story with different clothes.
Now, where would you have heard about this, Nick?
I would have heard about this from my Dr. Hensley, my writing teacher at Taylor University, Fort Wayne.
Yes.
And I'm sure that sort of stuff happens in other writing classes. But
sure.
And nine basic plots are very simple things like man versus man, which is, you know, war sort of stories, or man versus nature, which is twister sort of stories.
Or natural disaster
natural
type
disasters,
stuff.
Yeah.
So would you say like the typical action story where you've got a villain that the hero's trying to go after, would that fall under the man versus man category?
That's my understanding. Basically, anytime it's just very, you know, people versus people in fighting or in chess or whatever, it's basically, I mean, most stories have some sort of man versus man. It's hard to exist otherwise.
Unless it's The Revenant, I suppose.
That is man versus nature.
Yeah. I guess there's also some man versus man in there too, though, because I think he's after revenge, but still.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
nature. You know, Hatchet is man versus nature.
Yeah, yeah.
There's man versus time. You know, you're sort of, you know, the bomb's going to explode.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of
yeah.
stuff. Or, you know, I got 5 days until this happens. Or
the countdown, yeah.
Groundhog Day. In some ways.
Yeah, in some ways. Or maybe that's not a man versus fate type thing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's true. Probably it's more man versus fate or God.
I mean, yeah. So, yeah, it sounds like the plot idea is very nebulous. Like, it's not necessarily a hard or fast rule.
It's just basically man versus, and technically, you know, all stories are basically, at the very least, conflict.
Yeah.
And so basically just saying, here are your main fill-ins for your antagonist.
And you
get a man versus self where you just, you know, it's Dimmesdale whipping himself sort of stuff.
And I'm guessing you do a lot of mixing and melding of these things.
And I mean, I think the benefit to all these story engines, bare bones, and I'll just use the nine plots as an example, is that in reality, I'm not sure when you're writing, you're often thinking, I'm using plot number 7 and plot number three. I mean, I don't know many writers. Maybe some do. I personally don't.
Right.
But it's good to, like, you're reading a book or watching a movie or TV show or something. Why do I like this so much? And then you can start breaking it down into its pieces and see if there's some combination that seems to work. And sometimes I think, obviously, if you have a story that has just one, it's usually a little flat or a little more simple than one that has two or three or four plots
going
on top
on.
Of each other.
Yeah, because you don't want just it to be about a good guy versus a bad guy. Like, the good guy usually has some sort of, like, inner other thing that he's trying to achieve.
Or, it's a versus a bad guy, but the bad guy also has a bomb, so it's versus time. And then you also have the internal conflict. And then you might have another versus man, like your partner's, you know, wisecracking or something. You
right.
know.
In that sense, these bare bones ideas are not just useful for the viewer for understanding why do I enjoy this. But I guess if you're writing and you're coming up with a part that you're struggling with, or, you know, whether it's the generate plot or you just feel like it's become too flat, maybe that's a case where you need to look at some of these ideas and see, okay, what am I doing? What's going on in the story? And is there something missing that should be there?
Well, yeah, I never quite thought about it this way, but really all it is stories are a conflict. You need conflict. And it's just another way of saying, okay, here are ways you can make a conflict.
Yeah.
You know, in case you're having trouble, you know, like, oh, I hadn't thought about throwing society in there, man versus society, having not just first, you know, he's against the upper class or the lower class or the, you know,
right.
whatever.
And I guess I came up with the term story engine. I think I've heard that from one of the thing I've mentioned on the Lost podcast recently. Yeah. The one of the Lost writers who was talking about the early stage of development of the show. Basically, for like a TV show, they really needed, well, used the term engine. Basically, something to keep, you know, week to week stories to come out, plot, you know, problems that they would have to deal with.
Yeah, it's it's basically a conflict maker. On a Weekly Hijack, we just finished season two of Lost, and mainly the Hatch is a story engine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, here's a thing.
What do we do with it?
You know, yeah. You know, it's man versus mysterious computer. I mean,
or the others, you know.
Or the other. And there's two of them going, you know.
The survivors have their own ideology or, you know, goals.
Yeah.
Just survival, basically. Yeah. Whereas the others have this cult-like goal that they're trying to protect.
I think it was Abrams said that, you know, if he was interested in just survival story.
Yeah.
You know, that's really just one thing. So now you have survival and lots of craziness.
And really, Lost really only did the survival story for the most part for the first season. There's a little bit sprinkled in the second season, but and especially even after that, the survivors get into their own routine. For the most part, they don't deal with as typical, like, nature stuff.
So much conflict in every... I mean, there's no two people that can exist on the screen at the same time and not have some sort of conflict in that show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I mean, maybe we should go to another thing is character goals.
Hmm.
This is another way of, I guess, just making... it's another story engine.
Like, yeah.
Okay, so I have this... I want to write a spy story. You need to have him have some sort of goal. And, well, that's more MacGuffin, actually. We'll go back to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, some sort of, you know, what do I want in life? You know, when you play Dungeons and Dragons, you're like, what's my character? What's my motivation? You know,
yeah.
I want to avenge myself. I want to be a millionaire. You know, those sort of things that they always make you write, like in Ryan Kleiss, the kind of dossier.
Uh-huh.
How do you say that? I don't know. Like their height and their hair color and what they want. And, you know, and it's helpful if you're trying to get a hold of stuff. But I think... Again, like most story engines, when you're starting, you might start doing that. But once you get into it, it just kind of, you just understand, I need conflict. I need to grok this character.
Grok this character?
Grok. I love the word grok, which is like to fully understand. It's from. I think it was created by Heinlein in Stranger in a Strange Land.
Okay. I know that's a very key component of... I remember reading about the classic Hollywood style of movies, like they're talking pre-1960s. Basically, it's saying that a goal-driven protagonist was always a kind of a key. Like, you didn't ever want, like, kind of a wimpy character as your lead or someone who just, like, yeah, whatever. In other words, Obed would not fit in well with the classic Hollywood movie.
Or Hamlet.
Yeah, or Hamlet, no. Yeah, I mean, that's... Those are completely different types of things, and
they're almost anti-heroes in some ways because your hero wants something, and the conflict is that things stop them. You know, that's the traditional hero goal obstacle.
Right. The thing, funny thing is, someone like Hamlet is probably more accurate to real life. You know, because we hem and haw about our own decisions all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially in a traditional escapist Hollywood type movie, you want someone who knows what they want and is going to pursue it.
Do whatever they want.
It's sort of, you know, you're living through that person's adventures or escapades or, you know, triumphs.
And there's something very compelling about a character who knows what they want.
Yes, that is true.
And that makes strong characters, you know, because you're like, yes, he's getting, you know, the ones people get annoyed with character-wise tend to be either the ones that have a goal that just drives you nuts.
Walt, he's my boy. He's my boy. Walt.
Yes, we have referenced Lost for 30% of this podcast so far. Or the ones that, you know, they keep switching, like, or they're just single, you know, like the Walt thing. My common one is always like, I just don't trust you, Clark. You know, that's how I bring that up a lot. But, okay, so, you know, so we have the conflicts with his plot, story mm-hmm. engine, and then we have kind of the motivation. And then we have the MacGuffin.
Ah, yes, the MacGuffin.
So define this for us.
Well, this is a term I believe Hitchcock coined for basically the MacGuffin is this mysterious something that the hero wants, the antagonist wants, and everyone's trying to get this thing. Hitchcock would argue that a MacGuffin in its, well, I don't know if he would say this, but from my understanding, MacGuffin in its purest sense, it hardly even matters, really. Like, government secrets. And you don't have to explain what those government secrets are. You just know, okay, this computer file has a thing that has all this important information out, and we're going to do everything to stop it. I think in Mission Impossible 3, the MacGuffin is called the rabbit's foot. And they never even bother explaining what the rabbit's foot is. It's just like, it's a rabbit's foot. We want it. They want it.
It's the pure, I mean, that's a pure MacGuffin. And I think the problem is that shows in some ways, when your story engine's too, you know, the bare bones are too, you can see them.
Yeah.
People start calling foul.
Pretty much.
Or not always. I mean, you can get away with it cleverly. But when the MacGuffin feels like it doesn't matter, you better have something else.
Yeah. Well, and I think Mission Impossible 3 does have a bit. I mean, I know Tom Cruise in that movie is trying to protect his wife, which is a weird thing for a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
It's the only time they did that, I think.
That's an Abrams thing.
Yeah, I suppose so. But so, you know, there's a personal connection there. But yeah, it's not necessarily. You don't tend to have MacGuffins in movies that have a great deal of internal conflict.
No.
I mean, you may have something very understated, like Indiana Jones is after the Lost Ark, which is kind of a MacGuffin, but he's also like trying to protect history. I mean, so yeah. He has his motivations for seeking.
Yeah, besides
it.
Just, it's a thing. Let's get, I mean,
yeah.
Like some old school cartoons have the MacGuffin, like,
I suppose so.
You yeah. know, we have to protect this. Blue laser won't let you. You know, sort of thing. You know, and it doesn't, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
You know,
well, cartoons, especially like say your Looney Tunes stuff, boil these ideas down to like just the, you know, man versus man, bunny versus hunter.
Exactly. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yep.
I wonder sometimes, maybe it's not the same thing as MacGuffin, but you know, some of those shows that are basically just about the characters, like the mystery, like, Psych.
Okay.
Or mystery. Shows like that. You know, the mystery shows that. I mean, the mystery is almost a MacGuffin just to hang character interactions on sometimes.
I suppose so, yeah.
I don't know if that's the proper terminology for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't call it a MacGuffin because I think the idea of the MacGuffin is that it's a specific object. Although I remember joking when we joked about The Force Awakens that apparently Luke Skywalker was the MacGuffin.
And we don't even get him at the end. I mean, we get him, but
yeah,
that's about it.
We just see him.
Exactly. When probably in this Rogue One, the MacGuffin will be the Death Star plans.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so.
So, yeah, I think it's always the object, but sort of what you're talking about is sort of like a separate plot engine than what most people watch the show for. I mean, obviously, if people didn't like the mystery, they just drop
the
mystery.
Yeah, but the mysteries, I mean, they have to be interesting, but they're not really the central. That's what's moving the pieces so the pieces can have fun.
Right. Yeah, that's probably true.
So it is an engine.
I'd be curious how many, like, I'm sure there's some hardcore mystery fans that, like, really delve into, like, the clues and the putting things together.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what they would, like, would they discriminate against the lighter fair mystery stuff, or they just enjoy that as another part of the genre?
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
I have to dig into one of those communities.
Now, I haven't watched them enough of the new superhero shows, but do they have MacGuffins?
Sometimes. A lot of them seem to be.
Or it's more, I guess, here's another. Sorry, I interrupted you completely.
Go ahead.
But another version of the story engine is the monster or villain of the week.
Yes. And in that sense, unfortunately, I mean, I enjoy a lot of the current superhero shows. A lot of them feel disappointingly procedural to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, procedural being your cop shows that basically there's kind of a pattern that they follow each time.
I suppose procedurals, why they're procedurals is because you can see the bone so well. I mean,
well, people know
they're the same structure every time.
People know generally what to expect.
The story engine is pretty much set. You just dress it up different every day.
And you can, even the superhero shows will disguise that with a lot of superhero trappings. I mean, The Flash will have time travel and all kinds of crazy superpowers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's completely predictable each time, but most of the DC shows, I feel, have a more familiar beats to them than, like, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And this is just, and it pains me to say this because I'm much more of a DC fanboy than Marvel, but I can't predict what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to do
S.H.I.E.L.D.'s
from week
insane.
To week.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree from the ones that I have not seen a lot of DC, but it does seem like they're safer, they're more, I don't know, predictable is the right word, but.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
But yeah, more procedural-ish.
And sometimes, like I just watched the Supergirl season finale recently, and I mean, there's some good moments in there, but then part of me was, I don't know, it's just one of those shows that, like, I can see the outlines, or, like, there's, like, okay, you're doing one of these, like, okay, they had a mind control thing, and of course, they also had the time when, like, no, I know you're still in there, you can fight this, and I was like, it makes sense, but I've seen this in, like, every single mind control story I've ever seen.
So I guess maybe
we're getting a little off track.
No, I think you're right. But then you start going to tropes.
Oh, yeah.
And stereotypes. You know, at some point, because certain story engines work so well.
They've been done
We've been done a
times.
Lot of time. Then it's, I don't. What do you do about that? I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with a trope per se.
Not in and of itself, no. Yeah, it's a matter of...
I mean, it's a matter of owning it?
Yeah, sometimes it's a matter of owning it. Like, say, like we said with Doctor Who this season, they owned that they had a paradox in one of their episodes.
That was a great...
They literally winked to the audience and said, we're just having fun with this.
Yeah.
So in cases like that, that's great when you can just acknowledge it. Other cases, I don't know, if you can... You know, most storytelling is still recreating. You're bringing something, a new spin on old ideas. I mean, that's par for the course, and we've talked about that before. But if you can do it in a new way, use a similar trope in a new way that's still moving the story forward, but usually maybe surprise people.
I guess then that's the downside. I mean, the upside to all these sort of story engines is that gives you a way to start, a way to amp it up, or a way to... fix things or a way to, you know, make things work. But I guess the downside then is if you don't integrate them or layer them well, they just become...
stale.
They become derivative as opposed to... Yeah, when you say... It sounds horrible when you say there's basically 9 plots and all the stories are just retellings. But in actuality, there's a lot of stories we all love. And they don't all feel, you know, just because there's one Star Wars doesn't mean that, you know, Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and Babylon 5 aren't also good.
Sure.
Even though they have a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to do with the meat you put on it, the costumes you make it wear.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, even in a visual medium, especially, the design of the world is, you know, that can be very unique. If you have good art designers, if you have a good cinematographer, you know, you can fashion your own look for a world. And that, in some ways, that helps the familiar storytelling or some of these ideas we've been talking about, the familiar elements, helps them pop a little bit more. Or in some way, maybe that's not the word I'm looking for. Maybe it helps the viewer feel more adjusted to this strange new world you're discovering. Yeah. Like, say, Guardians of the Galaxy. All kinds of crazy looking, there's green aliens and red aliens and, you know, funny looking people in it. But, you've got this, like, group of rogues, basically. Yeah. And people know that and love that idea.
Exactly. And I think that's the other thing with story engines, that you can play on things. The reason people like certain things is because it touches something culturally or deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing wrong with necessarily going with, I'm going to write a revenge story or a Motley Crue story or whatever, a buddy cop story.
I mean, Toy Story is essentially a buddy movie.
It just isn't, you don't think of it like that originally. And I think it's a disservice of stories as a viewer, to simply boil it down to its tropes and its skeleton.
Yeah, that takes some of the magic out of it. I mean, it's good in terms of like wanting to analyze it, but don't feel like you don't necessarily have to analyze everything on the same level.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what do you feel about, as writers, as a creator, kind of using, when they teach movie writing, They always talk about you have the three acts, you know, act one, and it should be done in 10 minutes. You have a twist, and you have to act two, and then the character should, you know, you should lose, and then you should come back. I mean, those all make good stories. Is it, I guess, how much should we rely on those sort of things, do you think? I mean, that there's no good answer. It depends, really, but.
You mean like the timing of stuff? Like?
Or like the, you know, there's a, you know, there's kind of traditional three-act thing, you know, and it has to be a low point here, and then he comes back. And those make good movies, but then sometimes you watch those movies and you know he's going to be a low point here. And then the friend's going to say, I don't trust you at all. And
it is difficult because, especially movies, they're trying to mass market them. Usually studios don't want to surprise the audience too much. A bad twist can have bad word of mouth or, you know, something like that. If you know, if you lose your audience,
it,
you know, that's a bad thing. I guess in books and, I don't know, some authors seem to be able to get away with it easier than others. I mean, I don't think you should always try to do it, but I think that's the reason why sometimes you don't get the unconventional story structure in movies as much.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, because I think I'm always kind of torn because on one hand, obviously those structures work. And that's why people use them, because they're a great way of
keeping you grounded.
Pulling the audience along and whatever. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it seems odd to force your story to work that way when it's not. Again, I'm kind of an organic writer, so maybe that's the reason I talk like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I'm never going to be James Patterson, who probably has the kind of the rhythm down better.
Well, yeah. How many books does he put out a year?
Exactly. So. I don't know. It's a curious kind of balancing act, I think, because obviously, if you just rely on the story engine, do your work, and then you just put clothes on, like, oh, we're going to do this buddy cop, but we'll make this guy from the Bronx, and this guy will be from Texas, and then waha, you know, a romantic comedy, and like, oh, it'll be an Amish person and a socialite, and we'll be on, you know,
right?
And yeah, it's different, but then is it actually
unique?
Yeah. If you read the back cover copy of some modern books, it's always like. When he was 10, he was in a skating accident. Ever since, he's lost four fingers, and he worked in a UPS factory. And then an alien came down and visited him. And then he fell in love with the owner of a coffee shop. What's ensued? You know, it's just like they throw all these weird things together, like, and now it's a story. That's interesting. And you're like, it's almost too much off.
Well, I mean, but you also don't want to just set your story on autopilot either.
Yeah.
I mean, so it is a tricky thing. And I think a lot of it does come down to just for, and this comes more from some of our conversations on here than anything.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you've gotten to know your characters and your world really well, then hopefully you won't be falling into ruts too easily. And I don't think I'm saying this right. Like, you won't necessarily go on autopilot, but hopefully your interest in those characters and in that world will lead to interesting scenarios.
And I wonder, you know, the story engines, largely like the plots and the character goals and the tropes, they're all built around things that are basically you want to make good conflicts and you want to have emotional payoff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can certainly get the, and probably different authors at different levels, you can sense those sorts of things without having to. And those were, I mean, these tropes and these plots weren't invented, then stories started to be written. People started writing stories and said, wait a second, what's in common in the ones I like?
That's a good point, yeah.
So I think the goal is to maybe get these, you know, if you're having trouble, use them. But the goal is to get to the point where you understand conflict and paying things off and the kind of rhythm of interesting storytelling.
That's a good point. So even more so than usual, they're not rules, more like guidelines.
More like guidelines, exactly. Because, I mean, they're engines, but they're only engines because someone else has already found that they have motion.
Yeah, it's more like they were discoveries in terms of this is how this works as opposed to some cavalcade of English professors sat down and was like, this is how we're going to dictate that stories must be written.
They read Homer and then said, hey, we should learn stuff like this.
Yeah, there we go. Most art is imitation in the best possible way. Probably because, you know, just the very act of creating is in itself an imitation of the creator.
Yeah.
We've said before, all truth goes back to God. So
that's where we stand. Yeah, exactly. And so these are just things I guess it's good to think of them as discoveries and not rules.
Mm-hmm.
Or even like, you know, when you say the bare bones, it's like you're making the thing. No, it's not so much that as that we autopsied other stories and found the bones.
And sometimes you really are autopsying yourself as you're going, you know, like you have to step back from your sculpture. I mean, some people are like, who was it? Michelangelo, who would look at a block of granite and then it's like, I can study it for a long time. And then he would see the whole thing.
Yeah.
very few of us, I think, work that way.
Yeah.
I think most of us are discovering a story as we are in the process of creating
it. You can do outlines and use these things, but yeah, I'm very much built to discover the conflict, you know, and I like to think I have a decent sense of conflict and stuff and like to ramp it up, but we'll see. So I guess, so yeah, that's not bad. That's not a bad.
I think that's a good summary there. Yeah. I really like that as it being a process of discovery rather than a rule set.
And so yeah, go look what other people have discovered, but don't necessarily rely on them as
the Bible
or, you know, like a BuzzFeed list. Yeah. 10 things that will make your story awesome. It may not.
Maybe it will.
It might. Yeah.
Maybe it won't. Okay. With that said, I think it's time we went on to our soundtrack. Okay, since we've been talking about story engines, that was one of our analogies, I decided to go with Mario Kart.
Dun, dun, dun.
Namely, Super Mario Kart, the original. And as soon as I thought that's the game I wanted to go with, I knew which band I wanted to use. The 1-Ups.
The 1-Ups.
Yes.
Have we not done a 1-Up? No, we did Sleigh Ride, didn't we, one time for Christmas?
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay. See, I was thinking we hadn't. Oh, well. Anyway.
Well, that's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. And I don't think we've done one from Super Mario Kart.
I don't think so. Well,
So here, that's still something new-ish. This is from their album. They did a whole album on Super Mario Kart, which
Good
is why
album.
I thought of it. Yeah. But this is the one song that they from the album that they submitted to Overclocked Remix. The name of it is Funky Mario Circuit, and this is the radio edit of it, apparently. I think there's a longer version of
it. I think
it's
like 5 minutes
on the
album.
Yeah. But this is a little shorter. Perfect podcast length. We should really suggest Maze Dude do more radio edits of his, and you could use more of his.
I almost picked one of his today.
Yeah.
It was like 3 minutes, but I'm like, I done. Yeah.
Okay. Hope you enjoy it. It's kind of jazz funky. Enjoy. Thank you. Welcome back to the Satellite of Love.
Hello, everyone. Hope you enjoy that fun song.
Yeah, okay. Cam, if you could kind of come this way a little bit. I know this is not a video podcast, but you want to make sure you get our good side here.
Yeah, there we go.
So, okay.
And who knows, the Mads might enjoy us.
That's true.
Well, or unenjoy us.
Unenjoy us, probably more likely. Yeah. They probably...
Excourage us.
If it gets us off the satellite faster, I don't
want work.
I feel like the people been here have been stuck here for a long time.
Deep hurting.
We don't want that.
No. But you guys may get this in just a second.
Deep hurting?
Yes.
Well, quite possibly. Because guess what? It is time for a new segment. You can blame Nick for this.
Which may not last long. We don't know.
The name of this new segment is Pun Times.
All right, so here's what happened. We were watching on YouTube some of the O. Henry pun off stuff.
So this is a contest that takes place in Texas?
I guess in Texas, but and they get a category, and then they go back and forth to get as many puns as they can before someone... And we won't go that long. We'll do a couple minutes.
We probably won't last
nearly
that long.
We probably won't last near that long. But if you've listened to enough of us, we get to do these sessions when we start just punning back and forth. So we thought we'd try it as an actual thing.
Yeah, we'll see. We may be terrible at this. I mean,
may not even make the cut.
But we thought it was at least worth a pun for the money.
Yeah, so... Thank you. All right.
That's kind of how this will work.
Yes, this is awesome. This will be, you will either love this or hate this. So enjoy your punishment.
Nice. Okay. So Natasha picked out some categories from
us. She just made them off the top of her head and here, roll.
Okay. So we will randomly choose one.
Choose a category and then we'll go back and forth.
And number five.
Number five is book titles.
Book titles?
Book titles.
Oh, man. I kind of wish this category was just Gone with the Wind.
See, that is fabulous. I do much better at this. I had a good foundation.
I don't know. I think that's just kind of the trouble on the horizon.
Double points for you. So my son was asking me about, tornadoes and stuff. And I said, look right there, that's the eye of the storm. He's like, well, what do you call it in a dust storm? We said, well, that's the eye of the world.
Wow.
I don't know. I was trying.
What was the rule of the pun off? It doesn't have to be funny. It just has to make...
It just has to work.
It just has to work.
It just has to work. Yes. Thank you.
I really feel though for the audience listening to this, especially all our French listeners, they're going to be Les Miserables.
That's true. I'm trying to figure out make a pun off of them, not just have it end that way. Because, one time, I don't gamble very often, but I was in the casino, and normally for this one, I don't even remember the game, you throw one dice and you win or lose, depending on the number. But then you kind of do double or nothing. And so I ran two dice, but with a pair of dice, I messed it up. But anyways, my paradise lost.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
You got it out.
I got it out. Yes. So you know what you do when you make an egg breakfast thing with a lot of pork, right?
I don't know what
is a Hamlet.
Congratulations. You may think the problem with this game is even if you think you win, you're just a lord of flies. See, I'm not sure my puns are really making sense. I'm just coming up with using the first word or something and throwing it out. Like, your paradise actually, like, is a play on words.
It didn't deliver very well. But we'll have to get better at this, I think.
Yeah, it might need some practice.
It might need some practice.
I mean, obviously, the magic of editing will make this all sound much cleverer than it actually is.
But... Sometimes, if you see a statue, you ever seen those statues like in the middle of the city in the plaza and the water be coming out of them? But normally you play down, my kids play down the feet in the water, but I like to watch water come out of the fountain head. So, and the thing is really nice then if my Rennie's friend, she didn't like getting wet, so Anne ran away from it.
Okay, but seriously though, a good activity that you could do with your kids though, you go to, there's a college just over, not too far from here, over in South Bend.
Yeah.
You could have a nice picnic out over there and have lunch back in Notre Dame.
That's the best one so far. Lunch back at Notre Dame. Wow. I'm not sure I want to follow that one up. I think you're done.
Okay.
So, audience, you can tell us whether you want to try this again or not sometime.
Yeah, that was kind of rough. I mean,
I feel like we got a couple decent ones.
We kind of go. It's funny though. You start thinking of book titles and like, does it seem like it should be hard? But all of a sudden, you'd be like,
just blank. I don't work well under pressure. Like, or during the week, I'm like, oh, if we do this category, I can with like, I had like five of them real quick when I'm driving around, and I'm here. I'm like.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So I don't know. We'll see. We might give that another try at some point.
Yeah. We'll see. Anyways. Yeah. Okay.
So based on how that section went, I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. We've actually done this segment before, yeah. But we've only done it once, and that is live brainstorming. We don't really have a jingle for it.
All right. So because we're talking story engines, we have in front of us five piles of.
Bits and pieces.
We have a pile of plots, like versus man versus whatever. A pile versus kind of character, stereotypical characters.
Mm-hmm.
One of stereotypical tropes.
We'll see how stereotypical. I think mine, I tried to be maybe a little too creative with them. So we'll see.
That's fine. It'll be make it fun. One of MacGuffins.
And one of character motivations.
Yes. So we're going to just... pick them at random and
see what happens. And you know, obviously these are just the bare bones, no pun intended, this time.
I'm not sure any pun intended might work in the last one, but.
But I mean, obviously we can embellish on these, which is kind of the whole idea. You know, we'll come up with some random elements, throw them together, and then we'll embellish.
Yes.
So, okay. So should we start with a character then?
Sure.
Okay. So our first character is a talking dog.
A talking dog. Oh, this is a cartoon then. Or, well, not necessarily. It could be an old Disney sort of deal.
Yeah, possibly. Oh, or, you know, one of these modern like CGI type characters.
Yeah, that's one thing. Okay.
It might depend on. So should we go with plot first or motivation to follow that?
Let's do plot first. Where are my plots? This is my plots, I think. Versus machine.
Oh, so it's a talking dog. Okay, well, actually, we need to know a little bit more about this dog. So, okay, so this dog's motivation is to become powerful and secure.
Powerful and secure.
So
there must be some sort of machine that, maybe it's a futuristic, like, you know, one of these futuristic DreamWorks sort of, you know, like it's the automated pound or something. It's like Chicken Run, but like sci-fi.
Oh, okay, I could see that. I mean, the other option is if... like maybe real dogs are being replaced by robotic dogs and
like canines.
Yeah. Basically.
No pun intended.
What?
No, never. Canine's a pun.
Canine. From the dog. Oh, I see. That's the name of the dog.
That's the robotic dog.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. So we want a MacGuffin or we want a trope?
Let's do the MacGuffin. Maybe there's something because we have got a couple different options for what this talking dog is after against the machine.
The ultimate weapon.
Oh, wow.
Maybe he gets secured by shutting down. There's an ultimate weapon that can shut down.
Is he wanting... Oh, so he's wanting the ultimate weapon.
Well, both... It's MacGuffin. Everyone wants an ultimate weapon.
So maybe like, the talking dog is against... part of a group against talking cats. Is that a cats versus dog type thing?
But we got versus machine.
Well, okay, that's true. But, I mean, if they're both... that's a good point. Because maybe
he's like... he crash landed on a planet. Like he was like, you know, one of the dogs put into space.
Oh,
and it's all
okay.
Robots there.
Oh, nice.
And the robots are like, maybe there's two tribes of robots fighting for the ultimate weapon. He's trying to get it instead.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So, wow, this got really crazy.
So let's see our trope.
Yeah, what's our trope here?
Employer / friend is actually the bad guy.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So the dog wasn't alone in the spaceship because the dog in the spaceship is really cool. So there are two dogs in the spaceship, maybe like a boy dog, girl dog.
Well, do you want a dog or do you want like his astronaut friend, like his owner?
Oh,
and then his owner ends up being on the side of the machines.
Oh, does the owner get brainwashed or was he, does he?
He thinks it's best for.
It's best to give up individuality.
He's just a dog.
Okay, so he's going to donate his dog to science.
Something, maybe. Is that what the machine wants?
Well, maybe. Maybe the machine has this idea of, like, absolute purity. And, you know, the dogs are messy. I mean.
That's true.
So
he was a real friend, but at the end he's like, well, no, really, these guys are right. You're just a dog.
He betrays him.
The dog fetches the ultimate weapon finally.
Uh-huh.
Brings it to his master. His master, like, thank you, and he takes the weapon.
Oh.
He's like, now I can give this to my robot masters.
Oh, and then so then the dog has to defeat both the robot and his former master.
And then his former master at some point would probably say, I'm sorry, or you were right, dog, or, right. You know.
Oh, man, this is very tragic, but I'm liking it.
Yeah, there we go. You can make something out of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Not actually bad from such vague things. Yeah,
that we just kind of threw together.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, there's our first story.
Okay.
That was fun. Let's, okay, next character is we have got a chatty teenage girl.
Oh, all right. So everyone loves that. That's a good thing right there.
That's always fun. And her goal is to protect society.
Nice. Yes. So it's like Nancy Drew.
Well, yeah,
she's not chatty. So. I
don't think it's chatty. No,
but like a more modern is it clueless? Clueless. Yeah. Clueless or not Nancy Drew. Like all hip, Veronica Mars.
Yeah. Or I mean, I guess it depends also like on how old your teenage girl is. If she's the lore and sort of like that girl from Runaways. The comic book series.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
she just kind of she's hey, how you doing? I'm like, hey, what are you doing, mystery, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, awesome.
So it depends.
We need a plot for this.
Yeah, and that might determine.
So he's trying to protect society, but versus man. Okay, well that's good for protect society. I mean,
that's very broad. It's one of the most broad categories. Yeah. So I think we need to know what the MacGuffin is.
The MacGuffin is ancient location.
Oh wow! So like a young Indiana Jones girl here, maybe.
Yeah, like a. But if you're protecting society is like if you know it's like Atlantis but then it must be dangerous or maybe the man she's against or woman I mean could be wanting to use the power of Atlantis to make her own product line that would brainwash people like some sort of like designer clothes or lipstick or something that would control people that made out of some sort of thing from the ancient civilization of Atlantis
that she had stolen from the ancient civilization
or she wanted to. They got to get there. You know, they're both is MacGuffin, so they're both racing to get there.
Okay, yeah, okay, yes, I like where that's going.
Okay,
and now, what's our trope? I mean, we've got a lot. The trope is kind of a vague term. Yeah. It's just like one other
bumbling
element.
Sidekick.
Now that's interesting because we've already got a chatty teenage girl, and you think
then
that
you need the awkward silent boyfriend, like, but they don't know their boyfriend girlfriend. They're just like the good friend.
Okay, the guy that he's kind of always stumbling over.
But he
himself.
Talks about as much as Chrono in Chrono Trigger. Like he doesn't talk at all. So he's like the teller of Penn & Teller.
Okay, interesting.
So she's chatty, talking to him all the time. She just not. He just not.
I feel like this would make a great animated show.
This would, yeah.
Like, you know, something for on WB or something
like I could see like a Spy Kid sort of
deal. Like they all have their own little cool little gadgets that she's running around with.
Maybe we should write for Hollywood. This is awesome.
It's pretty easy, honestly.
Like, why don't I make my stories this way normally?
I'm pretty sure this is how it actually works, Hollywood, to be honest. Although they probably have a dartboard, not necessarily slips of paper.
So we have seven of every category. We have seven. The way we go, we could just see what we end up with.
Yeah, we just fly through a whole bunch of these. I mean, this is way easier than your fancy pants music thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got a 64-year-old man.
Okay.
Who?
When I'm 64.
I'm not sure why 64 was the number I went with.
Why not?
Okay. And his goal is to become a star.
Become a star?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So let's see his plot, though. What is he's against society. Well, he's 64 and trying to become a star, so I mean...
this is quite the contradiction.
It's an ageist sort of thing. He's versus society. Society doesn't want a 64-year-old
guy being
to be a star.
Celebrity.
And maybe he needs to be a star of something that's not normal. You know, it's like those sports movies where, like, you can't do that.
Okay.
And then you can.
Maybe
you know?
Maybe he's a, what's an unusual instrument to play? Like a banjo or a...
Sure, yeah. So this is like one of those feel-good Disney kind of sport event movie. You know, mm-hmm. He's like Banjo King or something like that. No, he's...
So does he go to like a talent
like
show? Like, well, okay.
That's wait.
Well, like either that, like something like that or maybe something like, you know, America's Got Talent type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
in the first act, he has to be shot down.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or something. But, okay, let's find the MacGuffin. Crucial evidence.
Maybe
while he's trying to become a star.
Maybe there's some evidence out there that the votes were rigged.
Maybe.
On the talent show.
Because they were, you know, he goes to like a Everyone's Got Talent sort of thing. But they're like, well, we can't. America doesn't really want you. Mm. So, but he's convinced that people did want him.
Right, right.
But, you know, the culture dictates that he shouldn't, or at least the people's perception of society, of the elite Hollywood society.
It's interesting. There's not very, again, this is unfortunate. Going against what we were just saying about Hollywood coming up with plots this way, I can't think of really any story, or very few stories that are about like an old person like this that would have... Most time when they do stories about senior citizens, it's in this very kind of mellow sort of...
Unless it's up.
Yeah, unless it's up. I mean, business-wise, it makes sense. If your story features older characters, you're going to appeal to an older audience. But wouldn't it be interesting to see more stories like Up, where like the motivation is just as interesting to young people as it would be might be to older people?
Have you ever watched... what was that? Secondhand Lions.
I've heard of that. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, it's about two old guys, but they're just... telling stories and trying to do great things again, and it's interesting. Anyways, okay, so we need our MacGuffin, though, right?
Oh, no, that was the evidence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we
need the trope. That's the one thing we haven't heard in this scenario.
Father thought he wasn't good enough. Aww. Well, that plays right into this.
It really does. I mean, the father basically fed into the same sort of stories that society was telling him.
It's that you can't be a banjo player.
No.
No one likes banjo players.
That's so 1950s or whatever.
If you're not a frog, you can't play the banjo.
So he's going to finally prove his dad wrong after living this very disappointing life. He's going to become a nationally known banjo player. Yeah.
Now, is his dad still alive or not?
Probably at this point.
No, probably act. Right near the right before Act Three, like his dad's sick the whole time and passes away, and then he plays the last banjo song for his father.
Aww, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I could write, got it.
We got it.
All right,
nailed it.
All right. Nailed it. Okay,
washed up cowboy.
Ooh, yeah.
Who is out for revenge for a tragic accident?
These can't come any better. Okay, and then our plot then is versus time.
Oh, man. I'm not... Interesting.
So he's revenge for a tragic accident?
Yeah, that's... I guess you should say that's his motivation.
Okay. But he's washed up...
So the accident may have been completely... Well, accident. So, you know, not anyone's fault, but he probably blamed someone for losing a loved one or, you know, car...
Well, maybe he... You know, maybe it's one of those things where he's going to lose the ranch and...
Oh, okay.
You know, so many days. He's a washed up cowboy. You know, maybe the end of the era... What was that movie? I think Kevin Costner directed, about all the giant fields being fenced in and the ranchers were dying off because they were fencing everything. It was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it sounds like something Kevin Costner would be in.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, what do we have next? Our trope is hidden power. This got a little strange all of a sudden.
That took the story in a very different turn than I was expecting. Okay, so this is probably a superhero story. Then.
Well, what about this? What if, okay, because you got Wash Off Cowboy, what if he's been given, you know, it's a passing away of the Old West, okay? It's like the end of the era.
Uh-huh.
And he's been given some last power, some sort of spiritual power from a Native American.
Oh.
And he has a limited amount of time to make that work before. Or I don't know if that's limited or whether the whole end of the era is enough versus time.
Hmm. I don't know. It's a different Buffalo Rider. Yeah. Oh, dear. It's a different interpretation of versus time than I was. I mean, it's versus time. Yeah, you have a limited time span versus time is in. That's almost like a society thing. Like,
that's true too.
Yeah. If the times
there may
are changing.
Be a time limit on his on the power that was hidden in the land or in the.
Oh, so he only has the power for a limited time, or has it for like limited spurts. Like maybe it's a superhero power that like needs recharging or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe maybe it's only good at night.
Now there you go. Like so he's some sort of.
So like there's a that's the time
Buffalo
like,
Zorro.
Yeah. I'm picturing a guy in buckskins riding a buffalo and one of those and a rapier, basically.
That would be awesome. All right, wait, we still need our
trope. Oh no, the trope was the power.
We need a MacGuffin.
Oh, we forgot about the MacGuffin. Yes.
Inheritance.
Oh, now that goes back to the saving the ranch type thing, though.
Well, maybe he's looking for revenge. We forgot about that.
Oh yeah.
Maybe it's revenge against some family member who's taken. It was revenge for an accident, though, right?
Yeah, that was at least original concept, which is tricky. It would be easier if it was like you know, a purposeful accident to try to steal the ranch.
It could be
or whatever.
An accident. Air quotes you guys can't see.
We can add that.
This one's a little rougher.
Yeah. Some of the elements are a little harder to piece together here. I mean, the idea of a washed up cowboy who suddenly develops powers that he has to race against time to use.
That's good.
I think that's pretty cool.
I mean, the race against time is the inheritance at, you know, like it passes for good to this other guy.
Oh, okay.
After, you know, midnight on such and such a day. So he has to get his, maybe
like he's required to like finish a monument or something. Yeah, that sounds kind of
like Crazy Horse.
Yeah.
It's never getting finished.
I mean, that would be crazy.
Don't look a stone horse in the mouth. I don't know. I'm lost to this one.
Okay. Well, we keep this up until we're hoarse from talking. We should probably move on. Yeah. Okay, but you know, there's some interesting ideas there.
Yeah, we could get something there, but we'll get through all.
We gotta hurry up. I think makeup saleswoman.
Oh, interesting.
So like a Mary Kay lady, yeah. I think, who wants to reconcile with a family member.
Oh, this has got to be some sort of drama / romantic comedy coming up.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and then our plot is versus fate or God. Comedy. We're comedy gold right now.
I love how we're like, oh, we're going along this track, and then we pull something that completely derails it.
That's awesome.
As it should be on the show.
It's providence.
Okay, so reconciling with a family member but versus God.
So I think like maybe this like one of these like things just don't go right, like Murphy's Law sort of
right
thing.
Like she wants to get her family together, but she kind of blames God for it falling apart in the first place.
What I think just fate constantly brings, you know, I think you play comedy where it's like she feels like she's cursed. Like every time she tries to do something, it makes it worse.
Okay, yeah,
you know, some sort of that sort of like
that's versus the fate.
And maybe
sort of
maybe
thing,
we
yeah.
actually have a character, you know, like some sort of, you know, like what was that called? Almighty, Bruce Almighty.
Oh,
some
yeah.
sort of like godish Loki figure there that's just like just like laughing at her, like you'll never work, you know, messing her up all the time.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so
which the Bruce Almighty, the Morgan Freeman was more of a hey, maybe you should try this.
Yeah, this would have to be more the other side, but you're stopping.
Right, because you're trickster god.
Okay, here's the MacGuffin.
You look like this is gonna throw us for a loop.
Buried treasure.
Buried treasure. Okay,
but it wouldn't have to be pirate treasure. It could be like
a bootlegger's treasure, maybe.
Yeah, like some sort of flea market. Maybe
something from like 100 years ago.
But why is she trying to get it? Maybe she's trying to reconcile with her mom. Is that who she's trying to reconcile with?
Just as family member. Yeah,
sister, mom, something like that. Not a sister, mom, but but. Like there's some priceless artifact, like some like, you know, antique roadshow sort of stuff,
or a family heirloom that
got sold off, and then she's hunting it down like a road trip across the country.
Okay,
trying to
I
get
like
it.
That, and she feels like this will bring the family back together if they have this link to their past.
And then they're just constantly things happen, like just fate just constantly gets in the way of
they get sniped on eBay or
yeah, like and she tracks it like all across the country.
Cool. Okay. Nice recovery there. What's our trope?
Our trope is long lost relative.
Oh.
So maybe at the end, the person who ends up with the heirloom is another relative.
Interesting. Or maybe there was a big split in the family because of this artifact.
Or everyone get a little crazy. Maybe the guy, supernatural figure that shows up and taunts her is the image of some long lost relative who was also cursed.
Oh,
you know, if you
okay.
want to go that crazy way,
that could work. Because the other thing I was thinking
is a twist. Then
yeah, then it's a twist. I like that because that fits in better with the trope idea. Yeah, the trope we had lost.
But then you could learn from her from the long lost relative once you figure this out how to reconcile with your mother has nothing to do with the MacGuffin, which they never get back.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. We got to rush through these because we're running.
We're taking a while.
Yeah. So we could combine some of these.
This put two of all of these. Well, yes. At least two of the plots you can throw. I'm not sure two MacGuffins going to be worth it.
I've got an extra character.
Okay.
So do you want to just do all three of them?
Sure. Do it.
Okay. So, well, this will be interesting. The president, a scientist, and an alien war refugee.
That writes itself.
They just have two goals. Live the American dream.
The war refugee, right? The alien refugee.
What's yeah, probably. American dream? And humiliate the enemy.
Wow. So those are perfect. Okay, so our we are versus self and versus nature.
Okay, that
throws things off a lot.
That really does.
I mean, the war refugee might versus himself, doubt and all that kind of stuff. That sort of stuff.
Versus nature, that's a hard one to reconcile with humiliate the enemy. Unless maybe these three characters aren't necessarily working together.
Well, that could be. Maybe it's like some end times event, right? Like 2012 sort of movie.
Okay.
And the scientist, the president, are trying to get back to living the American dream among this post-apocalyptic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the war refugee wants to...
Go back.
Wants to beat up the American... I mean...
Oh, yeah, he's trying... He's the one who wants to humiliate the enemy. It's not necessarily... Maybe the war refugee is a bad guy. I mean, you think refugee, oh, poor guy. But maybe he's actually... A twist. Maybe he wants to humiliate.
And maybe the war between the war between the humans and the aliens what causes massive nature event.
Okay, like the nature sort of rebels against it, or either that or there's like some sort of virus or something. What's our MacGuffin for this?
Here we go. They work together.
Okay, yeah.
They're virus vaccine.
Okay,
so that can be our
that goes problem. To the nature. Yeah,
probably. And government secrets.
Oh.
So, I mean, they could almost be the same thing.
Yeah, pretty practically, yeah.
And then our tropes are damsel in distress.
Well, if you've got a post-apocalyptic thing, you can fit that in just about anywhere.
Alien damsel or a...
Well, it depends on who's the protagonist here. Are we rooting for the humans or are we rooting for the alien?
Normally, you're going to root for the humans.
Yeah, but it'd be a really weird...
Be kind of interesting.
It would be interesting. I mean, you'd really have to establish, what the war between the humans and aliens was about, and you know if they deserve to lose. And
well, I feel like District 9, I can't remember, but it seems like you felt better, you decided with the aliens more than the humans,
right? Yeah.
And then the master dies. Oh. So the president, I think, should die.
Oh, okay.
At the beginning, scientist
and president
takes over.
Oh, he as president,
or at least the goals of the president, like what the president was trying to get done right before
I got gotcha.
He died.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So it's a benevolent president.
This would almost make a better like miniseries than a movie.
Yeah, I can see that because you have this kind of long term back and forth.
Yeah.
Did you ever see? Because I don't have cable, I probably couldn't have watched it even if I wanted to. But the show that Josh Holloway was doing with
The Colony.
Yeah,
I didn't have a chance to watch it.
Yeah. I was really intrigued by that.
Yeah.
The one basically where there's a. I think the aliens have taken over or something.
He probably is just basically living in their ghetto camp, basically.
Yeah, I think so.
Not quite.
I think they sort of compared it to like the French resistance in a sci-fi setting.
Yeah.
Which, hey, that sounds like a really interesting TV show.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right. So we need to wrap this up, but that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's probably not the way you normally come up with story ideas, which is totally fine.
It's not a bad idea, if you just get brain flowing. I mean, because then, there might be something in there, but like, oh, I would really like to do that. I mean, you could make a story out of all of them, but whether you really feel like you like...
Right. I mean, when we did a Pulp Fiction project that one time where we purposely said, we want to write a story in such and such genre.
Yeah.
And then we
came with some really neat stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's fun to have to work within some of those ideas like that.
Yeah.
But we have to be signing off here. So, but don't forget, if you would like to leave us a comment, let us know how you felt about the pun off idea.
Yeah. The pun times for everyone.
Yeah, hopefully it was pun times for you.
we might have to self-pick our category next time until we get better at it.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll tweak it. But certainly let us know how you felt about this episode. You can leave us a comment at derailedtrainsofthought.blogspot.com.
See us on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, anywhere good podcasts are sold.
Or downloaded.
Yes. Anyways, I think they're about right.
Well, they're in the other room over there. They're playing some sort of weird song about idiots and control. Idiot control now. The lyrics seem like gibberish to me. But anyway, maybe you should introduce your own soundtrack that would probably be better than this.
I tried to pick something different. I thought kind of the bare bones of a lot of games is fighting, is the boss or the battles. And so I picked a game from Gunstar Heroes, which I've never played. Name is Nice Legs. I don't know why. And it's remixed by Sir Jordanius. And it's fun. They call it kind of a like spy-ish. People say it sounds like The Seatbelts, who did Cowboy Bebop's music. Okay. I can kind of see that, but it's quite enjoyable. So hopefully you enjoy. Nice Legs.
That's the name of it?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Nice Legs.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. Well, wow. Hope you enjoy that. Until next time, this is Tim.
This is Nick.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, we got movie sign!
Pause for baby. No, that's the right word. It's like
oh, wow.
Live from the Phineas and Ferb haunted house.
The floating baby head.
Floating baby head.
Did you want to be on the podcast? Big smile there.
All right. Nice.
Someday, Mercy. So, Joel, how'd you like the pun off?
It stinks.